Welcome into this edition of the Golf Central podcast presented by Callaway Golf. I'm Lav, he's Rex, and he is actually driving home from the Players' Championship. And what a Players' Championship it was. It went an extra day, and quite frankly, it was worth the wait. The final round was wacky. It was wild. It was wonderful. We will break it all down, including Cam Smith's rousing victory at TPC Sawgrass. We'll get into what we wrote on Monday night and why we wrote it. We'll also look ahead to what this could mean for one Cameron Smith. But first, Callaway has developed their longest irons ever in the new Rogue ST line. These irons are breaking ground with a high-strength 450 AI face cup that's never been seen before in the industry. Callaway has continued to push innovation through their patented urethane microspheres and have massively increased their precision tungsten weighting. The Rogue ST lineup is available in four options to suit every type of player, including the Rogue ST Max for incredible speed, forgiveness, and performance. They're available now, and for more info, visit CallawayGolf.com. Rex can't lie. After a 14-hour day, it was amazing that I just got through that ad read with all of those various phrasings and equipment minutiae. As I mentioned, you are driving home. You are doing this safely, I presume. Apologies in advance for all of the audio issues you may experience during this podcast. Where are you now? Because I feel like you're in the middle of nowhere.
I am in the middle of nowhere. I have the earbuds in, so I'm as safe as humanly possible. Very impressed. After the day we've had, after the week plus some change, let's call it the hook. Look at you coming strong with the ad read late on a Sunday night. I am on, just got on I-4 off I-95, so I have about another 40 minutes, which is absolutely perfect for the pod.
Of course, you are not supposed to be heading home on Monday evening, and we can get into that. I am certain that we will get into that probably for the back half of this entire podcast. But let's first begin with Cam Smith, an incredible round of 66, however you want to cut it. 10 birdies, matching the most ever in a competitive round at TPC Sawgrass. It was actually matched by Patton Kizzire about an hour and a half earlier. 10 birdies on that golf course was slightly ridiculous. And so we had to divvy up the responsibilities tonight. You and I both cannot write about Cameron Smith. What did you write tonight? Because I have no idea. I have not checked out the website. I have not checked my email. I did not look at any other transcripts. What did you piece together tonight?
Well, if you were going to do Cam, I had to do the losers, right? So I had to do the also ran. And I'm always fascinated in this situation, because we came down to what was going to be a marathon Monday, right? They had to finish up whatever players had left in the third round early Monday morning, and then they turned it around pretty quickly. They repaired, sent them right back out. And Anibon Lahiri had a one-stroke lead going into the final round. This was going to be a life-changing day for him one way or the other, and he didn't get it done. And I'm always curious, how guys are going to react to that. And the first question he's asked in his post-round interview was, how do you deal with the disappointment of this? And he was waiting on this. And he goes, I'll tell you exactly how I feel. And he reached into his pocket and he goes, hold on, I have to find a text message from my coach. And it was from 2 weeks ago. It was on the Friday of the Honda Classic. And his coach pointed out that he was fourth in strokes gained off the tee and 14th in strokes gained around the green and fourth in strokes gained putting and 144th in strokes gained and approach to the green. He goes, I wanted to improve on that, and I did. And he did. For the week, he was 14th in that category at TPC Sawgrass. But it gives you an idea where his mind was at, because he wasn't willing to go down that road of, yes, I'm disappointed. Yes, I'm devastated. Yes, this got away from me. And he wasn't alone. Paul Casey finished alone in third. Again, it could have been.
Hold on. Asked Anibon Lahiri how he would deal with disappointment in the very first question? We have to have some context here. What Anibon Lahiri was going for on Monday, I keep wanting to say Sunday, but on Monday in the final round of this Players' Championship, would have nearly been unprecedented. He was outside the top 300 in the world ranking. Craig Perks, when he won in dramatic fashion in 2002, was ranked 203rd in the world. Now, I think you and I would both agree that at their respective stages in their career, Anibal Lahiri was a more accomplished player than Craig Perks was at that time. Lahiri has played on a President's Cup. He's won, I think, 18 times around the world. He's won twice on the DP World Tour, but basically he has not done anything, Rex, since 2015. And as you mentioned all the stats that he was pleased with and the signs of improvement. Anibal Lahiri was literally, this is not an exaggeration, literally one of the worst ball strikers on the PGA Tour of 218 players.
He was 14th at strokes gained off the tee. I mean, strokes gained approach to the green.
Rex, for the season, of the 218 players who have qualified or have played enough rounds to qualify for that statistic, he was 202nd in strokes gained approach. That is the single most important stat on the PGA Tour, is strokes gained approach. If you are not a sharp iron player, quite frankly, you just can't contend on a yearly basis. You look at the top 10 that statistic, it's the heavy hitters, right? And you look at the bottom of that statistic, it's guys who are going to be scraping for their card. And that is exactly what Anibal Lahiri was doing entering this Players' Championship. Didn't have a top 25 finish in months. He was outside the top 200 in FedEx Cup points. He desperately needed something good to happen, and he ended up finishing second and collecting, what, $2.3 million. So whoever asked him about disappointment and how he's going to get over this disappointment, I promise you, Anibal Lahiri wanted to win this Players' Championship. He wanted that five-year exemption. But I can assure you that once the hours turn into days and turn into weeks, he will not be disappointed by this finish. It was nothing short of incredible that he was able to summon this type of performance. And rant.
I'm not going to throw a colleague. Yeah, that was quite the rant. I'm not going to throw a colleague under the bus. I don't know that I would have asked it, because it did set up what I was trying to get to. To your point, my follow-up question to that, I didn't ask the first one. The second one was 24 hours from now, what are you going to be feeling then, when you had a chance to process this? And his word was relieved. And to your point, he was relieved, because it had been a difficult few years for him where he couldn't find the center of the club face and the results weren't there. And he had been struggling, and all of the success that he had had right about the time that he made it to the President's Cup and he sort of burst onto the PGA Tour, that seems like a distant memory. So this was an opportunity for him to go out on a large stage and prove to himself that you can put yourself in contention and try to get it done on Sunday. Didn't get it done. We can sit here and split those hairs, but I think
he played awfully well, Rex. I mean,
it was a really bad hole.
I mean, that was a really bad hole. He hit it. He ended up taking a drop 80 yards left on a par three, which is hard to do, but
on number eight, so I'll fill in blanks.
Per Justin Ray, the stats guru, Anibal Lahiri is the first player since 1985 who had a 54-hole lead, shot in the 60s, and did not win. So again, Anibal Lahiri will certainly take a lot of confidence, and has job security for the rest of the season. How about Paul Casey, your boy, who was looking for a capstone victory and yet once again came up a little bit short?
No, I think he had very similar perspective. I think at 44 years old, he understood. He was asked in the morning after he finished up his third round about a comment that our colleague on live from Paul McGinley said that this would be that signature victory that is missing from his resume. Paul didn't like the question. I'm sure he didn't like the comment, but he did acknowledge that, yes, there's some truth to that, that I don't have a key, that key victory that you just mentioned. I mean, he's won in Tampa, he's won in Houston. But this would have been sort of the feather in the cap that would have made his career. So there's going to be disappointment there. I don't know that he was asked in that context, but even like Anibal, I mean, he was able to put it in context. The way he said it to me was, I went out on a really hard day at TPC Sawgrass and shot 69 and gave myself an opportunity. And he got unlucky. We could sit here and talk about what happened on 16 and what he wasn't able to do versus maybe if he gets a bounce there, he can put some pressure on him. But I think he was pleased, because I just think in the realm of professional golf, we always have this conversation that were you beat or did you lose? And in this particular case, I think those two players and Kevin Kisner, who finished alone in fourth, would all tell you they got beat by Cam Smith. And I'm sure that was the theme of your column.
That was the theme of my column. And just to fill in some more blanks in case you did not watch the final round, Paul Casey, his drive on the reachable par 5 16th ended up in someone else's pitch mark, not his own. And so he was not entitled to a free drop. That was a huge turn of events, Rex, because you had Camp Smith absolutely smother hooking a drive on 16, needed to pitch out diagonally, had 238 yards for his third shot into the par five. That should have been a green light special for Paul Casey to attack, apply some pressure on Cam Smith. He was trailing by two shots at the time, potentially, you know, maybe even he can tie it up at that point with a two shot swing. Instead, he has to just kind of like chop out down the fairway and really didn't give himself, like, he didn't even reach the green with his fourth shot after ripping a wedge off the front of the green. That was a huge momentum swing with Cameron Smith roping a three iron and making par, and Paul Casey being unable to make up any ground there. And so, yeah. So with my comp, so did I even claim that I wanted to write Cam Smith? Cause you and I were thinking about doing rock, paper, scissors over who was going to do this lead story. There are a lot of players on the
No. Open up the curtain entirely. We had both talked about neither one of us doing a lead story because neither one of us were all that excited. And this is nothing against Cam Smith. He played a brilliant round of golf. He played a brilliant week. He's just not the most exciting guy to write about after what was a very long week. So in all honesty, to peel back the curtain for everyone completely, neither one of us wanted to write that lead column.
That's where I was going. I said, if you look at the first page of this leaderboard, we do not root for players. We root for stories. Now, some players have better stories than others, and I think it has been proven over the course of his career, and Cameron Smith is now a five-time PGA Tour winner. He is not the most willing author of his own story. Let's put it that way. By all accounts, he is a great dude, a great hang. The Australians absolutely love him. He's a Jacksonville resident now, and the locals have really embraced him. However, if you get him in an interview setting, it is difficult. And so, going to be honest, not just you, but myself, we're dreading the prospect of having to put down 1,500 to 2,000 words on Cameron Smith, knowing that he was not going to light us up in a press conference setting. I did what I usually do, and that is attack all of the periphery in Cam Smith's orbit. And so for the story that I wrote on golfchannel.com entitled Grit, Guile, and Brass, Cameron Smith Won the Players the Only Way He Knew How, I talked to his caddy, of course. I talked to his best friend who had moved from Australia to Jacksonville, Florida 4 years ago, basically to serve as his personal assistant, whether that was his weightlifting spotter, his swing videographer, perhaps even just his drinking buddy. So I spent time with him. I talked to his mother. I talked to his sister. I talked to his girlfriend. I talked to Matt Kelly, the caddy for Mark Leishman, who was out there watching with keen interest as well. And Rex, a common theme that not just occurred to me while watching Cameron Smith play the final round, but has occurred to me over the course of his career, is that this guy has, I'm not even sure we can say it on this podcast, so I'll just have a direct quote here from Matt Kelly. Quote, Cam just has the biggest balls. And so what I wrote on golfchannel.com was his stones, was his cojones, was the way that he steps up in the moment. That is the only way that you can describe the back nine that we saw from Cameron Smith. There was a fearlessness. There was I watched a player, Rex, who was unafraid of the consequences, who went out there and won it. While Paul Casey was laying up on the 12th hole or receiving a really unfortunate break on 16, Cameron Smith went out and won it. Yes, he pushed that tee shot on 17. But he still executed a great shot. He could have potentially been flirting with disaster on the 72nd hole, and instead he got up and down with a super clutch 60-yard wedge shot. I mean, this was a guy who was unafraid to go there and get it, and that has really been the hallmark of what is now an ascendant career on the PGA Tour.
I was fascinated, and you're right, that was grit, that was guile. I like that angle that you took, because when you consider how the round started, he birdied his first four holes, and you're thinking to yourself at that point, he's going to win by five strokes. Like, he's going to win this walking away, and things really started to come apart at the turn. You started to see some loose swings, you started to see some quick swings where they start going left. We've certainly seen it in big situations where his drive has gone right, so you're wondering, how is he going to navigate this brutal closing stretch at TPC Sawgrass? And for him to be able to pull it off with guys behind him adding pressure, it's not as though everyone behind him was just bowing away and not doing anything. The players behind him, and Lahiri, Casey, Kevin Kisner, they all made runs at him. And the fact he delivered is pretty good. One of our Australian colleagues referred to it as a kind of a quintessential Queenslander. I don't know what that means. I know that means he's from Queensland.
No idea what that means.
But I get the idea. I don't know. Is that like their version of coming from Detroit, where you're just a tough guy? Is that it?
That's probably actually a really good comparison. I mean, there's just a gritty. There's a toughness to them. There's a won't back down didness. That's not a word. But after a 15-hour day, that is one that I just made. And look, I talked to his caddy, Sam Penfold, who like Cameron Smith, obviously, is Australian. He said he just has a very Australian attitude. He loves fighting. He doesn't back down. He's aggressive. And I think when it comes to Cameron Smith's skill set, he certainly relies on his short game a lot. And so that allows him to take on pins or engage in some riskier behavior that others probably would have shied away from, because he knows that he can just take out his lob wedge, flick it close, and then move on scot-free with a par. And so when you look at the stats, he hit very few fairways. A couple of rounds, he hit very, very few greens, but he filled it up once again on the greens. He gained more than 11 and a half shots on the field with his putting. I think he drained somewhere more than north of 130 feet worth of putts in the final round. I mean, you have to do that if you're going to make 10 birdies, but that has kind of been the hallmark of each and every win that he's had on the PGA Tour. Each of his individual stroke play titles, Rex, he has led the field in putting. This one, though, was a little bit different just because of the shot quality. Certainly the stage is the biggest of his career. It's the deepest field in golf. It's golf's fifth major. And to come out and do what he did, I think it certainly stamped him as a player. Now you have to seriously consider in the major championships. I mean, if he can beat the Field of Players Championship on this golf course, there's little reason to think that he can't continue that type of form at Augusta National, where he's also had a lot of success.
Yeah, I mean, there's no part of his game that you would point at and say, no, there's a specific reason why he's not going to be able to pull this off. I would say, and I always put a little bit of stock in this, that if you can win on different styles of golf courses and prove that your game travels, I think that shows that you're a complete player. The fact that he won this year in Maui, and now he's won this, he probably won the easiest test so far this year on the PGA Tour in Kapalua, and now not the hardest, but certainly one of the hardest tests on the PGA Tour. So I think that's an impressive level of what he was able to accomplish. And you're right. I think there's a grittiness to him that lends itself to these big events. So the next logical transition, of course, would be a major championship.
Yeah, I still think his driving leaves some to be desired. I mean, when you think about him going up against some of the great players on the PGA Tour, he is by far the most erratic. That is an area of his game that he has identified as a weakness. He has worked hard to address it over the offseason, but he still has a long way to go. He can get away with it at a place like Augusta National, but until...
Yeah, but none of the top players were around at TPC Sawgrass. That's kind of the key on that one.
Well, yes, but I also think it's fair to say that TPC Sawgrass is a quirky golf course, sure, in which the best players in the world have proven over time that they can occasionally struggle at. I think that is probably a fair assessment as well. And look, Cameron Smith cannot win a U.S. Open or an Open Championship driving the golf ball the way that he does. He can win at Augusta National. He has had good finishes there in the past, was in one of the final groups just a couple of years ago, but he needs to tighten that. And if he does, look out, because his short game and his putting stroke are as good as anyone on the PGA Tour. We mentioned it, very long week, 8 days. It took until Sunday, about midday, in order just to make a 36-hole cut. What were some of your other takeaways from the first massive event of the new year, Rex?
Well, we talk about what Cam Smith did well and why he ended up winning. I guess the one that immediately comes to mind, and just because it's fresh in my mind, because it was Monday, is your boy Victor Hovland. And he's got a problem. I mean, we can talk about his what's going on with his chipping and what's your level of concern. But anytime he had a chip, you and I both would look at each other like, oh, this isn't going to turn out well. And 9 times out of 10 this week, it did not turn out well. Talking with him after his round, he knows it's a problem. He knows it's something he has to work on. But he also knows that it's not getting any easier. The longer you keep going down this road, the harder it's going to be to sort of turn around and go back in the other direction. Because it's gotten ugly, man.
So this is the second week in a row that he has had some monster issues. And you and I actually we kind of foreshadowed this. Well, one of our early week live from hits, I had an opportunity. I walked and talked with Victor, I believe it was on Tuesday, and we were talking about Bay Hill, because it was kind of a disastrous showing around the greens, as it tends to be with Victor Hovland. He was, I think, 3 of 13 with sand saves. He was 19 of 30 scrambling overall. I mean, that was the difference between finishing in the top three and potentially winning by 4 or 5 shots, which the way that he was ball striking it, he should have done quite easily. And once again, at TPC Sawgrass, we said, look, the rough is going to be probably even thicker, more dense around the greens, but he was probably going to be bailed out a little bit just because of the softness. You know, it's not quite as scary when you get some of those tighter, grainier lies, and then with the green running away from you with some of these peat dye greens, that can certainly be very diabolical. And yet he still struggled mightily. I mean, he was 66th in strokes gained around the green, lost nearly 2 shots to the field in the final round. And I think of some of the moments that were bigger than even the stat sheet would show. I think of the 12th hole in particular, drivable par 4. He was just short and right, had an opportunity to tie the lead once again if he can get what should have been a very straightforward pitch shot up and down. Instead, catches it a little bit thin, almost chips it into the water on the other side of the green, missed the green on 15, was unable to get it up and down for par. Another momentum killer on 16. He was left of the green, should have been able to get that with up and down with plenty of green to work with. Instead, leaves it about 12 feet short and does not hole the birdie putt. I mean, it was a glaring weakness. And Rex, it really is shocking to see someone of Victor Hovland's caliber have such a glaring weakness in their game. We can talk about Colin Morikawa's putting. We can talk about Rory McIlroy's wedge play. We can talk about John Rahm's. Well, I don't know. John Rahm is a very complete player. Basically, everyone in the top 10 in the world has some sort of deficiency. For John Rahm, I guess this year, it is his putter a little bit that is holding him back. However, they are not to the extreme, I would say, that Victor Hovland's weakness is. I mean, losing 2 shots the field with your chipping is extraordinarily bad and something that he needs to figure out quickly, because that is the determining factor in why he is not challenged more in the major championships or some of golf's biggest events.
Well, to your point, when you look at a player of that caliber, and you're right, the ball striking display he's put on for the last 2 weeks, he should have won both of those events by multiple strokes. I mean, that's how dominant he has been. Other than putting, and I know what you're saying about Rory's wedges, I think that comes and goes sometimes with him. I think if you would check the numbers statistically over the course of his career. But other than putting, I don't know that I want to call it a skill position in this particular case. Do you see such a deficiency when it comes to someone of that caliber? I mean, sure, you're going to have the 125th ranked player in the world have issues either with his putting or his chipping, whatever the case may be. But this is a world-class player. And for him to have a problem that seems so obvious that the minute he misses a green, you and I look at each other like, I mean, it's over. Like, he's not going to get this up and down. And it's so, it must be, it has to be so debilitating for him to be in a position to be as good as he is and to miss a green and know there's nothing I can do here.
I mean, it just has to eventually trickle into the rest of his game because it just puts too much pressure on your iron play to basically try and hit all 18 greens, because, you know, as soon as you miss one, boy, this is going to be an uphill battle to get it up and down. And when you get into Florida and some of these grainy lies, or you get to Augusta National with some of those really tight, scary lies, or you get to the US Open where you know you're going to have really tall, thick, gnarly, rough around the greens, that has to be so scary for a player who shouldn't be thinking about this. I mean, no player of his caliber is intentionally playing away from a weakness as much as Victor Hovland does. And look, he has acknowledged for the past couple of years that this is an enormous weakness in his game. He has worked on it with Pete Cowan, who he hired to be his short game coach. He has worked on it with Jeff Smith, who has been now his longtime instructor while he has been on the PGA Tour. The fact of the matter is, it's just not getting any better. He was second worst on the PGA Tour in strokes gained around the green heading into this week. And after the Players' Championship, and losing more than 2.5 shots the field around the greens, I have to think that he is now the worst chipper and pitcher statistically on the PGA Tour. You mentioned some of the big names who did not stick around for, I can't even call it the weekend, the final 36 holes. Jordan Spieth comes to mind. Xander Schauffele comes to mind. Patrick Cantlay comes to mind. Of those big guns who misfired, any big surprises, any big alarms to you now as we turn our full attention to Augusta National and the upcoming Masters?
No, as you pointed out, this is such a quirky, ooh, Buc-ee's. They have such good food in there, and I'm starving to death.
Great, anyway, great food and a really underrated barbecue selection, Rex. Cheap prices, tons of rubs.
And really cool hats, by the way. I've got a couple of the Buc-ee's hats. No, as you pointed out, it's a quirky golf course, and I think guys can show up here and get blown off course. Literally, this particular week, they got blown off course if you're on the wrong side of the draw, or just by the fact that maybe you're off in one little portion of your game that I don't think would be as glaring at a place like Augusta National or really anywhere else. And let's face it, Pete Dye, this particular place is an acquired taste, and not every top player has acquired the taste. I guess if I would point to one person, you had anointed Patrick Cantlay the next great thing because your feature, which was very, very good. I would recommend anyone go and watch it. But we now officially can call it, the Ryan Lavner curse continues.
Yeah, I did not see that one coming. I mean, Patrick Cantlay does not have a great record. I think he would have loved to see what would have happened in 2020. I think he shot 65 in that opening round, and then it was wiped off the record books because of COVID. But yeah, I think I honestly would not put much stock into what happened this week. And that's a weird thing to say about the deepest field in golf on a championship caliber golf course when you're less than a month now away from the first major championship of the year. But there was about a 2.5 shot differential, I believe, between the early and the late starters. I mean, the conditions on Saturday were absolutely wicked. And the fact that Justin Thomas finished outside the top 30, Rory McIlroy finished outside the top 30, Louis Oosthuizen finished outside the top 30, Jordan Spieth missed the cut, Scottie Scheffler was outside the top 30, and he's the hottest player in professional golf right now, would not have alarm bells for any of these guys. I think it was just a super weird week. You're probably getting somewhat close to home, Rex, and so I want to wrap this up, because you were not supposed to be heading home. You were supposed to go on vacation. This is spring break for those in Seminole County, which is where you live in Central Florida. It is spring break for me up in here in Northeast Florida. My wife works for a state college in Florida. She has adult spring break, as she has had every week of her adult life. We have a trip, and we can certainly get into that. But why aren't you heading where you're supposed to head, Rex?
I was excited. We have pretty much grown kids. We do have a junior in high school, but he's on sort of autopilot. He was going to go spend his spring break, as you pointed out, which is this week, with his friends at the beach. And so my wife and I, for the first time in essentially our adult life together, we were going to have a spring break just for us, an adult spring break. Very much looking forward to it. And the plan was, it was a very well thought out, well drawn out plan. We were going to Asheville. We were going to drive. She was going to meet me in Jacksonville. We were going to head straight up. We're going to stop at St. Simon's, see some friends. We're going to stop in Savannah, maybe for St. Patrick's Day, and see some friends. Very excited about this until I got a phone call two nights ago that says she was canceling the trip, or she had canceled the trip.
And when she had canceled. She had canceled it. She already had, without your input.
She did. And when I asked her why, the first thing out of her mouth was, we have things around the house to do. We can clean the garage. And my response was, that's what you're going to come at me with straight out of the gates. Clean the garage. Let's try this again, because you're not selling this.
And she countered with,
we have some, we can do some pressure washing on the back porch. And so it just went downhill from there. And so I'm driving home to apparently clean my garage and pressure wash my back porch.
It also sounds like your car is potentially exploding. What was that noise?
No, it's a rental car. And you know how when you change lanes, it beeps. And so I was changing lanes.
Did you not use your blinker?
No, because it's there was some construction right by the exit. So I don't feel like I have to explain myself to you. Where are you going to spring break?
We are leaving promptly at 9 a.m. tomorrow for Turks and Caicos.
Without your kids.
Without my kids, because that, of course, would not be a vacation, toting around my wonderful three-year-old and my six-month-old daughter. My in-laws have arrived in Nocatee. They thankfully, blessedly, we'll watch them and squire them to daycare over the next 4 days while my wife and I gallivant on the beach, drink countless strawberry daiquiris, and otherwise just enjoy everything that the Ritz-Carlton and Turks and Caicos has to offer. That's why we're taping this podcast on Monday Night Rex, because I don't want anything to do with golf gotcha. Over the next 4 days. I don't want to check my email. I don't want to check my phone. And I certainly don't want to look at the first two rounds of the Valspar Championship. That's not to say that when we fire up this Golf Central podcast presented by Callaway Golf next week, that we will not be recapping the Valspar, because we will. I will catch up on everything that I have missed. But for these next 4 days, I'm going to be blissfully unaware of everything that is going on in golf. Since you are going to be home, Rex.
Cleaning garage.
Zero excuse.
That's right.
Since you are going to be home with no excuse, what are you going to be firing up?
I was thinking about that because you will be out of town, so I guess I have to carry the mantle. I'm open to suggestions, but I'll come up with something between now and then. I've already done ribs on the pit barrel cooker. I really like the way they worked, but I think I need to experiment with something else.
Ribs obviously would be delicious. I'm hoping you can do some spatchcock chicken.
I've already done that as well. I knew that's what you're going to
say. Have you?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm a big fan of that.
Oh, it's delicious. What else can you do? What else can you do?
I'm thinking about just doing chicken wings because I found a really good recipe for that. So I might just go that route. Since you're going to be in the islands, I might do like chicken wings with like a jerk rub in honor of your trip to the islands. How about that?
Oh, I appreciate that tribute very much. That's a very touching gesture. And I would recommend, as I would to all of you, if you live in the Southeast, try and find Four Rivers barbecue sauce. It is delicious. It is tangy. It is exactly what you want to have on your wings. You don't have to dip them. You can just glaze them after you pull them off the grill. Even though I am flying home on Friday night, I can assure you I will be firing up the smoker on Saturday and Sunday. It has been too long. This is a dire Players Championship week, despite having very little golf to watch or cover over the first 3 days of this tournament. It was such nasty weather, and my patio situation is such that I couldn't even fire up the grill because we were not getting either out at a reasonable hour, or it was an absolute monsoon, or even it was unsafe to be out there. I can assure you, I will fire up the grill this weekend, probably with wings too, if I don't get my fill in Turks and Caicos. Rex, I'll let you get on your way. Make sure you use your blinker for any other lane changes you have. Otherwise, I will direct the nearest officer in your direction. But thank you guys for listening to this edition of the Golf Central Podcast presented by Callaway Golf. Make sure you check out all the stories that we mentioned from the final round of the Players Championship. You can catch it, of course, on golfchannel.com. We'll see if Rex can go viral for all the wrong reasons this week on Twitter. Make sure you keep it locked for that. And we will talk next week with a recap of the Valspar Championship before Rex heads to Austin for the WGC Dell Match Play. And yeah, a whole lot of good barbecue.